Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the Mike Armstrong podcast show. And this evening, we're joined by Sunil Jaiswal, who is a tech entrepreneur based in Telford in England, in the UK, so not a million miles away from me. And like I say, he's a tech entrepreneur. We met on Clubhouse, and we're going to have a little chat about Sunil and find out a little bit about what he's involved in. And, you know, what are the opportunities there are for the future, etc. So how are you doing today, Sunil? You okay?
I'm good, thanks, Mike. Very, very good. Thank you very much for having me.
No problem at all. Thanks for coming. Like I said, we met on Clubhouse the other day. But I've had a lot of guests on recently from Clubhouse. I love Clubhouse. I love social media. I love playing around with technology. You're a tech entrepreneur as well. Tell us a little bit about the sort of technology that you like to play around with and how you ended up sort of coming from being whatever you used to being a tech entrepreneur.
Oh, well, I think it goes back, the tech side of things goes back to when I was 13 years old. I was in the UK. My mum's British, my dad's Indian, so we were born and brought up in the UK. And then at 13, my friend got a computer. This is going back to 83, something like that. So I was probably I was very young. And it blew me away. It blew me away. The minute I saw the computer, I knew I wanted one. I wanted to learn how to program. And so literally since then, I've been learning how to code and still learn. And I love computers. And I think that I was very fortunate that I ended up liking something that was paid well.
It never
felt like work, Mike. You know, it's like, when I was 13 years old, we moved to India. My dad retired and I went to school in India, and I was one of 70 kids in a school where there was in the class. We had 70 kids in our class, and we had a computer lesson once a week. And I was the kid right in front at the computer doing animation and graphics. And then 2 years later, I was designing medical heart simulators. When I was 15, 16, won some national competitions, was on TV for my programming skills. And I had I wouldn't say a line of people at my door, but there were quite a few people knocking on my door for me to work for them. Yeah. And, you know, I started to work when I was 18 years old. So I quit college. Like, I don't need college. I've got a job. And that's when the journey started in IT.
Yeah.
But I think that where IT has served me, or my programming brain has served me, is when I've done all kinds of businesses. I've done real estate. I've done a trade show business. I've done a personal training business. I've done teaching, education. Every one of those businesses, I've actually had 40 businesses over the last 20 years. Most of them failed miserably. A couple of them did very well. But when I look back at my skill as an entrepreneur, it's understanding technology and it's using technology to my advantage. So, for example, when I look at properties, I built a software or a program that actually analyzed the market and would find me property deals that were basically below market value. And it was pretty simple. It was manual to begin with, but then it got automated. And that software or that process of thinking, I eventually started to teach it to other people, and it was very successful. 21 countries. I don't know how much property has been bought by my students, but I had a training company many years ago in the UK. So for me, the common thread was being able to use IT, being able to use technology in business to get ahead, basically, to beat everybody else.
Yeah, well, I've got a very similar sort of experience, I guess. And I worked in a fintech startup business that sold IT solutions to corporate companies. And I used to go into corporate companies, 50-year-old companies, 100-year-old companies, 150-year-old companies, 10 million plus turnover. I had a department of 17 people, which I grew from 7 to 17. I used to deal with the top end of the 10 million plus turnover businesses, so right at the top of the companies. And I used to go into these big corporate companies, ask lots of questions and find out where they were excessive in their labor, in their people, and how I could implement IT to save them cost. Right. Yeah, so they'd spend a lot of money on this IT, which had been my sale, Yeah, because it would save them a lot of money in human costs. So the same thing that factories have been doing for years, I was doing in credit control, credit control departments, shared service centers, you know, anywhere where large corporate companies had manual people using information, that they could have had technology helping those manual people be more efficient in the use of that information and data and that sort of thing. So similar sort of thing by the sounds of it to yourself. Which is interesting because I used to have to ask questions in order to visualize how things were working, used to then be able to actually identify how you could plug something in that was tech that would replace part of the system that wasn't working so well. And so I could visualize things. And ever since then, I've been visualizing solutions to all sorts of tech problems. And for me, it's a real annoyance because I wish I almost studied computer studies at A level. I did accounts, economics, and geography. And I've always wanted to be able to code, because if I could code, I'd be a millionaire or billionaire by now, because I've had so many great ideas, but it's just the coding is the problem. Like, you know, for me, it's getting the coding done. But sounds to me like you solved that problem by being the coder.
Yeah, and I think that a lot of my friends entrepreneurs are also, I'm not going to say scared, but that they think that technology or coding is this wonderful little magic thing. And they don't even put their toe in. It's almost like they steer away from it and they go and get somebody else to do it for them and they don't understand it. And I think that's a real shame because really, like, if I think about what is technology or how do you use technology, it's about understanding numbers. And you touched on it, you know, it's like numbers tell a story and technology allows you to get a good idea, a good grasp of numbers. So in business, you know, we used to know that every 42 people we spoke to would buy one of our products in one of my businesses. Yeah. So when you understand those numbers, when you know exactly that every 42, on average, every 43rd or 42nd person you speak to is going to say yes to you, it doesn't matter so much about the 41 other no's you've got because it's systematic. It's a process, absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so I think that being able to look at things in that way, like, okay, here's a process. I do this, that happens. I get something out the end of it. Then how do I tweak that process? And it's not just tweaking, it's how do you use technology to make that process smarter, faster, cheaper, better. And I think that's been the common thread through my life is doing that, looking at the numbers.
Yeah, well, I've got a success formula, which I created at the start of lockdown after creating a happiness formula. I just carried on creating. My brain was just, you know, in thinking mode and creative mode and was just producing content. So I come up with this happiness formula because I happened to be going through a very happy period in my life at the start of the pandemic. Like when most people were panicking, I was like just loving life, you know, enjoying the British spring, summer that we had. And I'm a very weather dependent person. I was out exercising every day, just loving life in the sun, just, you know, looking at the pandemic as an opportunity rather than, you know, the way a lot of people were seeing it as a problem. Produced this happiness formula, which I knew was the reason why I was happy at that time. And that led me onto a success formula. And a big part of my success formula is called Streams, is 7 pillars of success. But one of those pillars is technology. And that's because I believe if you want to be successful, pretty much any walk of life these days, you've got to adapt and integrate technology into whatever it is that you do, because that's what technology exists for. It's there to save time, to be efficient, to do things that humans can't do, et cetera, et cetera. So, you know, I 100% agree with you, if you like, on the tech being the solution to a lot of problems, if you like. And yeah, you know, I think, you know, this pandemic is going to create, I think to some of the 15 or 20 or some of the top businesses were all tech companies. I think, you know, the next 50, 100 top big businesses are all going to be tech companies. A lot of them forced out of this pandemic, you know, situation because so many businesses have pivoted during this time, and they're going to benefit massively from the efficiencies over the next 10, 20 years, et cetera. So what business, I know you do a bit of tech investing and stuff now as well. You've done the property business, you said. What businesses have you sort of last exited, and what sort of businesses are you looking to get involved in the future, if you like, because I might know some, I might have some ideas. There might be some listeners or people on are watching the YouTube channel, etc. So tell me a little bit about that, you know, sort of where you've been and what you're looking to go into next.
Sure, yeah. So in 2006, I started a trade show business in Dubai, and it was around property. We had an exhibition or a trade show called the Indian Property Show, which we launched in 2006. So at the time I was the CEO of the company, and we did very well. Of course, 2009 came and we got smashed to pieces because no one wanted to sell property. Nobody wanted to buy a property, but that was an exhibition business that I ran. And then we succeeded. We became very successful. I stepped down as CEO. And in 2016, I was still advising the business from the tech side of things. But 2016, I sold that business and I found myself looking for something else to do. And that's when I discovered website investing. And because I was looking for a business to buy in the US, I wanted to move to the US and live there in Florida. Orlando was one place I'd looked at. And I met a business broker in Orlando who said, well, why don't you invest in a website? Now, I'm a techie. I was building websites in 1999, you know, and I was like, invest in a website? It seemed obvious, but something I'd never heard of before. I was like, well, what's that? And I started my research looking around, and I found a guy called Jeff Hunt in America, who's a website investing specialist. He'd written a book on it, bought his book, read it from front to end, called him up, said, Jeff, be my mentor. I'm going to invest in websites. And he said, okay, I'll mentor you. And I remember analyzing the markets and looking at websites, taking him a number of deals in the high six figures, and he just he poo-pooed all over them. He was like, these are not good investments. And so I think over the last 5 years, I've spent a lot of time learning about website investing, and that includes like SaaS businesses, software as a service businesses.
Yeah.
That includes e-commerce businesses. I think those are the two majority ones. There's also a third type of business, which is a wonderful type of business if you're ever an introvert. If you ever feel like being an entrepreneur is daunting and you've got to speak to customers and you've got to have stock, the best type of business is what's called an advertising business or an ad sales business. Yeah. It's where you build up a business online, you're able to bring traffic to that website, and then you place adverts on that website and people click on the adverts, you make money. Now, when you talk to most people and say that's a good business model, they think, okay, well, you can make £100, £200 a month. Well, you know, we're talking about big businesses in the 7-8 figure range. Yeah. So that business model, even though it's a very simple business model, you've got no customers, you know, you're just bringing people to a website and referring people to other people's products or having adverts, you can make some serious money on that model. So there's various models that I looked at, and I've now learned that I was looking to buy a website that I would run. And through Jeff's connections and through people I started to meet in that world, I eventually ended up forming some partnerships to invest as a silent partner in some websites. And I would say probably 90% of those websites turned out to be SaaS websites, software as a service. Mm-hmm. So there's a tool called Longtail Pro, which is a SEO research tool. So I've got a little bit of a share in that one. There's a software called PickReel, got a little bit of a share in that one, and et cetera, et cetera. And I've had some e-commerce websites as well. And recently exited the e-commerce website. I would say exited because, I mean, what attracted me to these websites was not that you could buy it for $100,000 and sell it for $1 million. It was, if you buy it for $100,000, you're gonna make $50,000 a year. So the ROI on these investments is just absolutely phenomenal. I mean, you know, today you can go out there and find a business that gives you, you know, that the value of the business is two times the revenue. So you're making 50% a year, right? And so you can buy websites at $1,000, you can £1,000, you can work with websites at $100,000, $1 million, $10 million. There's all price ranges. Obviously, the higher you go, the more substantial the business, and usually the higher the multiple,
yeah.
Right? Obviously, the smaller the business, the fewer number of years it's been running, it's riskier, and so the multiple goes down. So there are some businesses you can buy for $1,000 that will make you $1,000 a year. Now, you know, that's what attracted me to that market, that high ROI. Yeah. But you also have to understand that high ROI basically signifies high risk. You know, you can't, you're not going to have a super, you know, riskless investment that gives you 100% ROI. No. So a couple of the businesses that I bought, gone to zero. Some of the businesses I bought, they're doing okay. And some have done rather well. I haven't had a business that's gone to the moon because that wasn't what I was looking for. I was looking for cash flow. How can I invest my capital and that gives me a regular income each month? So I'm looking for businesses that were already stable, running, and they've already had that growth.
It's like buy to let in, you know, in the property world, really. It's like, you know, exactly. You buy the asset, buy the business, it gives you the regular cash flow.
Exactly. So those are the businesses I looked at. Those are the businesses I invested in. And I'm at the moment, I'm not looking for any more SaaS businesses. I think that if the right thing came along, I'd be interested. My focus has moved a little bit more towards the crypto space and understanding that. I'm not a big fan of Bitcoin. If you ask me about Bitcoin, I'm going to sit here and tell you it's going to go to zero and then everyone's going to fight with me. But I can't see utility in Bitcoin. But so that's me. So my tech brain, when I started looking for investments, it's about how do I use the data that's out there and how do I put that into a spreadsheet and what kind of functions should I use to analyze what's coming in? And I think that the biggest lesson that I've learned is as an investor, as an entrepreneur, is to really understand how you work. So for me, I like disk profiling. I don't know if you've ever heard of disk profiling, Mike. It's like Meyer Briggs or whatever it is, but I'm a very driven, outgoing, I like doing the deal. Mm-hmm. I'm not a good manager. I'm a good creator of deals. So I have to make sure that the business model that I look for has to suit my personality, especially if I'm going to run a business. Yeah. So if I want to go and run a business where I have to just manage it and talk to people and do that, I can do that, but it doesn't excite me. I'm the guy who wants to go and create something from scratch and turn it into a big business. That excites me. So there's various business models, whether it's property, whether it's website investing, whether it's stocks and shares, whether it's crypto, whether it's starting a business, traditional business, whether it's being a deal maker. You know, I like to tell people that you could be a deal maker. You don't have to have money, but if you have an opportunity, you can make stuff happen from that. Yeah. But, you know, so it's for me, I believe it's very important to understand your psyche, what you're good at, what you don't like, what scares you. Some people love to be with their backs against the wall. There's 10,000 or there's 100 people asking for money and you've got to fight your way through it and make the sale and make it work. Other people, that will kill them. It's just not their, what they're put here to do. Yeah. And so it's very important to find a type of business model that suits your personality, whether it's investing or whether it's starting a business or, you know, whatever it is that you do. So that's for me is critical. Understand yourself. So I've had two big businesses. I would say I had a training business that I took from zero to I was like £2 million a year, which is back in 2004, 2005. And then the trade show business that I took from zero to about £8 million turnover a year over the course of 3-4 years. So yeah, that's me. That's my monologue.
Yeah, I took a telesales team from 7 people to 17 people over 8 years. And that was from £300,000 to £5.7 million growth. So that's 20 times growth. So that was quite good growth. So yeah, I've been there, done that as well. But looking to do that. I did that on someone else's, company, really. So I'm looking to do it on my own company now. So I've got about 5, 6, 7, maybe 8, maybe more great ideas for like our apps or software or different things. And I'm looking for investors as well. So if, I don't sound like this is stuff that you're interested in really with the SaaS and that, but if you know any other tech investors who are looking to get into, I'm either looking to develop them all as separate companies, or I might develop one company with them all as the IP for that company, if you like, you know?
Yeah.
But I've got a team of coders who are going to work with me and build them all. But I'm just looking to see if I can get an investor to stick some money into the pot, like, you know.
So my feedback for a lot of people come to me and ask me about this. I got an idea for an app. I want to build this app. You know, I had somebody else in Clubhouse the other day talking to me about the app they've got. They've got an investor lined up.
Yeah.
And for me, it's, you know, I'm going to give you two situations, and I'm going to you know, almost present to you as an investor. Yeah. So the first one is, you know, Mike, I've got an idea for an app. I need $100,000 of your money to go and build it.
Yeah.
And typically what happens is that's just an idea. You know, Sunil, how many users have you got? Oh, I got no users yet. Have you built the software? Well, no, I haven't. It's just an idea. It's a very, very, very good idea. I can see the gap in the market, but at the moment, it's just an idea. Well, I wouldn't be surprised if you asked me for 70% of my business. Leave me with 30. Because it's so risky for you to invest in that business when it's an idea. You have to cover your bases. Yeah. Now, for me, that's a really bad deal as an entrepreneur because I'm giving away 70% of my business. But people get excited because, hey, I'm getting some money. I can go and build this. Well, that's scenario one. Let's look at scenario two. It's where you have you go out, you have the idea, and you go and prove the concept. I'm not even talking about building an MVP, a minimal viable product. I'm talking about proving the assumptions of the business, because every business, when you start, has assumptions. You know, it's like the assumption could be in your business that I'm going to build this software and someone's going to pay me for it. That's a big assumption. And a lot of people believe that you need to build a product in order to prove that assumption. Yeah. And if you prove that assumption, then guess what? You're very investable. People are going to throw money at you. If that assumption was wrong, you're going to fail. Right? Unless you can pivot and you can do something different. So I always tell people, look, how can you, without taking money, or maybe you put a little bit of your own money, how can you go and prove the assumptions of the business and then go to investors? So if I come to you and say, okay, Mike, you know, I had this idea for this app. I think that those people are going to pay me £10,000 a month for this software. I've went and talked to 3-4 people. They've all signed agreements with me that if I have this software, they will pay me 10,000 subject to whatever, whatever. For example, right? That's one way of proving something. If I come to you with that and say, this is what I've got, I just now need the money to go and build it. I've got all these customers willing to pay me money. Well, will I give away 70%? Hell no, I'm not going to give away 70%. Will you be very excited to invest? Yeah, the risk is lower. So the more you can do before you go to investors, the more proof you can get. You don't have to build a big piece of software. There's so much open source software. There's so much off the shelf software that you can buy today. You know, if you want to have an Airbnb website, well, you can go and buy software that's called an Airbnb clone. Someone's seen that people want to start Airbnb websites. They went and built the software and you could buy it for maybe $500, you know, £500. So, you can start your business very cheaply, but with the motive of proving the assumptions. And then once you've proved the assumptions, you're in such a strong position to go and ask for money if you need it. You know, you might use this £500 software off the shelf to prove that people will pay you money to do this, but you need to spend £50,000 building your own software.
The solutions that I got, I know the size of the marketplaces and how much money people will spend on it, etc., because a lot of the software that I develop, if you like, they're solutions to problems that I have, if you like. Yeah, so therefore all I gotta do is know, for example, the size of the marketplace are the same people having the same problems. Yeah, so like Hootsuite and Buffer, I've got a solution to a problem, which is better than Hootsuite and Buffer, yeah? So like, for example, that's one solution. I know the size of the marketplace because I know the size of Hootsuite and Buffer's marketplace. And I know that if you was to build like a solution that I've got in my head it would be better than their two, yeah? And also, both of those two. So the thing is with tech companies, yeah, is that they're run by tech people who don't understand sales and marketing and don't understand hitting the right the right price to get to the right marketplace. So like for example, Hootsuite and Buffer, which are two programming softwares, right? They both do good features that each other don't do. And they both haven't actually copied each other's features, right? Which are unusual in the tech space. But actually, if somebody come along and actually built a system which had some of the features of either one of them together combined, and then actually hit the right pricing point. So because I used to work for a business services company, which was rapid growth, I know what the sweet spot is for the mass market for SMEs, which a lot of people don't know. And I know what the being slightly overpriced can do to make sure you're not hitting the mass market. You're only hitting the 10, 20% of bigger companies, you know, the medium and large SMEs and the corporates, right? Which is not the mass market, right? The mass market are 1 and 2 man bands, and 90% of businesses in the UK are 1 and 2 man bands. And nearly all the people who provide tech products, they sell those products at a price point and at a marketplace aimed at the medium SMEs, the large SMEs and the corporates, and they miss the whole mass market of the majority of businesses operating, right? Yeah. So like, I know, so I've come up with some solutions, which are basically just improvements to what already exists, but because I'm a user of these products and I'm a massive analyzer of stuff, I've analyzed user experience stuff that needs tweaking that just haven't been done for years. Yeah. Plus also additional features that haven't been done for ages. Plus I've identified when some of these companies haven't got the price point right to hit the mass market. So basically they're operating at a small percentage or a big percentage, but of a very small market rather than getting a big percentage of a much bigger market. Yeah. And so most of the solutions that I've got in my head as a product, yeah, I could sit down with anybody, do the maths, yeah. And the maths, once people see the maths and are on NDA, understand the solutions, I'm pretty sure anyone who knows anything about tech and marketing and sales will understand the principles of the reason behind these projects, if you like, yeah. Because that's, I think about everything. I'm a sales and marketeer. I've been in sales all my life since I was 11. Yeah, I don't think like a lot of people, they create tech. So I use almost all apps, all software, I play around with them all. And nearly all of them are designed by tech people who don't understand sales and marketing. So they develop the tech right, but they don't get the pricing right and they don't get the marketing right and they miss the core marketplace. A good example of that is LinkedIn. LinkedIn sells to all the recruitment companies and has missed the whole business universe because they overpriced themselves for the whole business universe to get as big a share as they could do on the recruitment side of things. And they're stuck in a situation now that they can't go after one market because they've got another market which is paying a high price, yeah? So they snookered themselves basically, yeah? So like I've got a development in mind for a LinkedIn that's better than LinkedIn, for a price point that's better than LinkedIn price point, and for an additional feature that LinkedIn doesn't have that would make it another product for another marketplace that is already substantially large. Yeah. So basically there's like, because I've got a certain experience of, I used to work for a credit reference agency and I used to sell business data. And so because I have that knowledge of business data and market requirements for that data, etc., I know stuff that other people don't know, unless they've worked in the credit industry. And in my company, there was 250 staff. Only two people would know what I know about the data, yeah? And then, you know, one of them doesn't use LinkedIn as much as I do. So may not have had the same idea, like, you know what I mean? But and that's how ideas come. They come because of a certain level of experience and a certain level of usage. You know, you come to a situation and you're like, well, why haven't anyone else done this? Like, you know what I mean? So I've got things like that. So for example, I've got in my head a product that basically could be the Facebook to MySpace, yeah, that, you know, to LinkedIn, basically. You know, like Facebook come along and wipe MySpace out, yeah? Well, I think I could do that with LinkedIn. I really do believe I got a product in my head that could wipe LinkedIn out, yeah? Because it would be better priced it would be a better product and it would be fit for purpose, because LinkedIn is like a wolf in sheep's clothing. It pretends it's one thing, but it's actually something else. Yeah. So it pretends it's a networking tool, but it's actually a headhunting tool. Yeah. And it's never really appealed to the mass market. I've been using it for 20 years. I've never paid a penny to LinkedIn. There's a billion of me. Yeah. And I would have paid some money to LinkedIn had they got the pricing point right, but they never have. Yeah. And they've never actually had the functionality right as well for the mass market user. Plus, they don't know what I know about business data. And so therefore, I could make LinkedIn much better than LinkedIn straight away with the use of data that they haven't got and solving a problem that they haven't solved. Yeah. Because I can solve that problem because I know how to solve it and they haven't thought about it. You know what I mean? Because they come from a different industry, yeah, and a different business. That's the sort of solution that I got. So they're, I've been sat on some of these ideas for a while because they're not get somebody to do a bit of coding or buy an off-the-shelf solution or whatever to find a solution to it. You need to spend some money on building the right solution. But if you build the right...
I completely reject that notion.
Yeah,
I think there's always an intelligent way of getting money in the door initially. So in some extreme tech cases, you need to have an MVP, right? Minimal viable product. Yeah, like granted. But in most situations, if you're talking of a product that you can, if you can go and create interest, you don't have to have the product. You can create interest. You can get people to buy into the idea. You can get people to back you. I just think people go and ask for money too soon. I'm not saying you shouldn't ask for money. I'm just saying before you go and ask for money, you know, be in a really strong position, because then people are going to fall over themselves to give you money at a lower percentage
I think that's my route always. My route is always to go to market, prove the concept, you'll get the business in, et cetera, et cetera. That is the only way to do things as an entrepreneur.
Yeah.
But in the case of a better LinkedIn than LinkedIn, if you like, I think if you go around and tell most people without seeing something that you can do a better LinkedIn than LinkedIn, most people think you're crazy, because that's how people think, because they think, oh, LinkedIn has like been there for a long time. It owns the marketplace, whatever, blah, blah, blah. Because most people they think because something's big,
that's the challenge of marketing, right? So it's never the better product that wins in the marketplace. It's the better marketeers that win in the marketplace.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
So if you've got an idea for a better LinkedIn, right? And you've got an idea for a software. Now, if you were to go and let's just understand what LinkedIn is. It's a marketplace. It's like Amazon, where you have buyers and sellers. LinkedIn is a place where you have people on there who want to connect. The more people on there, the better value of your business is.
Yeah.
So it's a catch-22 situation. In a business like that, you're going to have a huge amount of money to market it, because you've got to pull people away from LinkedIn.
Yeah. Or you've got to produce a system that when people see it is much better, and they're like, well, why am I using that one instead of that one? See, and a lot of people are visual when they, you know, a lot of people need to see something to see that that's better. If you was to try and describe to some people, oh, listen, I can give you this system. It's going to do this, it's going to do that. It's going to be a lot of people, because it's tech, a lot of people wouldn't necessarily see that. Like, you know what I mean? With tech, they've got to see it. That's what I find. It's that a solution.
I'll give you my view on that. And what you're telling me is that logic wins. And my experience, I'm not any kind of data scientist, is that logic never wins, emotion wins. Yeah. And so even if you've got a better product, because people are quote unquote addicted to what they've got, it's very hard to pull people away, even if it's a better product.
I think in some things it is, but I don't think people aren't addicted to LinkedIn. For example, I used to use LinkedIn. I've used it for 20 years. I used it every day for a long time since the start of the pandemic. And as soon as Clubhouse came, I've dropped it. Yeah. So because I find a better alternative, but yeah, I find speaking on Clubhouse is better than texting on LinkedIn. Yeah. And instead of you having a, you know, 10 conversation to get to a point of trust, you can have a 1 minute conversation in audio and get to a point of trust. So it's like much more efficient, like, you know. So this is what I think with a lot of these tech things, because they're nameless, faceless organizations, tech giants, right, with no customer service and no customer brand loyalty or value, I think they all are actually at risk. Yeah, I think Facebook could easily be overtaken by somebody else, right? Because nobody respects Facebook, nobody appreciates it. People think that they're dodgy with the data and all that sort of thing. They got no customer service. You can't, if something goes wrong, you can't pick up the phone and speak to anyone, all that sort of thing. And all of these big companies have the same problem, right? They're all at risk of being taken over by someone else, which is why they're all massively panicking, because of Clubhouse, because they know they've got no brand loyalty in that. They're the only ones doing what they're doing. If someone comes along and offers something better, just like MySpace to Facebook and now Facebook to Clubhouse or LinkedIn to Clubhouse, whatever, there's no loyalty there because there's no customer contact, there's no relationship, yeah, there's no contact at all. Yeah, so these are nameless, faceless tech companies, and that is their biggest downfall. Yeah, so I think, you know, you're right in a way. You know, when people are addicted to something, they get stuck in those ways. But I think with technology, if you can provide efficiency, time saving, you can find add-on value, you can provide real reason for people to change, then people will just up and change. That's my, you know, lots of people have done it with Facebook and Instagram. Lots of people have done it with Instagram and Snapchat. Lots of people have done it to TikTok now. You know, and lots of people have done it to Clubhouse from all of those platforms. Yeah. So you can change people's behaviors by offering them just something better or something. But I think the way to do it, I could easily go and sell the concept of what I'm offering under an NDA to some corporate companies and say, if I could do this and I could deliver this, would you be in that? And I would get some interest in that because I've sold IT solutions and that's just about selling features and benefits and efficiencies and all of that. I could easily go and do that. It'd take a long time to get a decent book without having a demo product, without having something that people can visualize. It would be a lot harder to sell. It would be, you know, your KPIs wouldn't be that great on something like that. If you can build something which they see instantly is better because of the real thought that's gone into the features and the functions and stuff, and you say, well, listen, this is what it does. Would you use this instead of that? And if so, you know, what would you value it at? What would it be worth to you with those additional features? I think then you could probably sell a lot more of it, like, you know, because like I say, the real problems that I've solved with in my head with the systems, they're real problems, like, you know what I mean? They're real user problems that still haven't been solved. And I think, I think definitely.
So sometimes, what I would recommend for you, you know, Mike, yeah, and I recommend for other people is, you know, you're an entrepreneur, you're not necessarily a tech guy, but you understand tech.
Yeah.
You know, so what could be good is to find somebody else who complements you.
Yeah.
So who's not into sales and marketing, but who is a tech.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And then you partner up, and maybe that person can do some of the coding, the development. That's what they bring to the table. Yeah. You bring to the table the sales and marketing and the idea, and you come to some, you know, some good equity share between you.
Yeah,
that's how it should work.
That's where I've just partnered up with a tech person who's got a team of coders. They teach coding to kids, and these kids need real world situations to code against. So I found that person. I need somebody with the investment as well, who's used to tech projects. Yeah, who can, because I can get these workers working for me for nothing because they're kids, and I can factor in percentage splits of the revenue of the company down the line or whatever, like, you know, so because they want projects to work on. So I don't need the investment necessarily, but I think if I get an investor in who can work in a three-way between, you know, me as the ideas man, the features, the functions, all of that, the tech people as the project manager and the resource of the coders. Yeah, and any investor for because you can get the kids to do stuff and that, but every now and then you need to pay for a top coder to develop that bit of it, or, you know what I mean, sometimes you need different, you know, money spent on different things is usually my experience, like, you know, because the thing is, as well as I've done this lots of times before. You know, I've gone into corporate company, built technology based on what they wanted or what I've seen the market as, got an investor, as in the person who wanted to pay for the solution first, taken it to an IT department, had it built, got that investor to buy that product, you know, based on the contract that we've done, and then sold it multiple times to the vertical, you know, to the industry then. So I've already done this project a number of times.
Right.
The only difference is here is these ideas I've got are too big for that. They're too big to just go and find one investor to pay for the one thing, because the it's not like, like I've done that before where it's been like a 20 grand deal or a 50 grand deal or something to potentially to build like a new LinkedIn or whatever. You know, you're probably looking at, you know, a few hundred thousand, like, you know what I mean? You know, and the rest, like, you know, I would imagine, you know.
Because you mean, so apart from the cost to develop the product, right?
You need
money to market it.
Yeah, of course.
You know, because that's where, and then what happens is you go into iteration mode. So iteration one is you get X number of dollars for version one of the software or idea one. You spend money on marketing and you observe what happens. And if you get usage and if you're lucky that it takes off, maybe that's all you need. But for most people, it's back to the drawing board. It didn't work. Let's go change the product. Let's go spend more money on marketing. Oh, okay, it didn't work.
Yeah.
And so it's that pivoting, that change process that takes a lot of time, a lot of money to get right.
Yeah.
Because even though the idea might be there, it's just,
Yeah, you're just tweaking it until it's on point. It's on point. But yeah, you know, like I say, if you do know any investors anyway, you know, like I say, I think we got the right structure. I got the coders, got the team. I know between the 5 to 8, maybe 10 ideas that I got, if I can get 10 of them built, I know there'll be a big, you know, success in amongst those 10. There usually is. That's like angel investors. You know, they back 10 businesses, knowing 9 of them will fail, but one will be big enough to cover the 9 losses.
Sure. But understand, Mike, that if I'm an investor and you come to me, you want money for one project, and I know you've got 9 others on the side, it's a big risk to me.
I, as an investor, want
you to be all in on one idea. Mike's going to spend all of his time making this successful.
I might try and get an investor or grant or something in a company that is an IT development company that invest in all of the projects, like, you know what I mean? So they're like, so they're all under the one umbrella. Like, you know, that's my thought process on the structure.
You need lots of ideas. Sounds like you got lots of ideas. You got the drive, Mike. If you need money, I'm sure if you knock on enough doors, you'll get the money.
Yeah, definitely. Well, yeah, you know, I will. I know I will. So, I'm going to say, you know, I'm quite creative. There are ways around getting investment all the time. It's like with sales and marketing, for example. A lot of people need 30 grand or 50 grand or whatever they need to go market a company. I can save 20 grand of that myself with just guerrilla marketing tactics and SEO and, you know, social media. And it takes longer, but it can all be done on much less money, you know, if you're willing to work hard at it, which is, that's always where I add to the mix. Like, you know what I mean? If you're willing to just knock the doors and do the tweets and the posts and the podcasts and the YouTube, you can build
all the audience.
It's all hard work. Yeah. But if you're willing to do that, I've spent my life doing that. So that's just like par for the course, like, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. Nothing is easy.
No, exactly. Like, you know, all these rooms on Clubhouse that, you know, pitch, you know, how to go from 6 figures to 7 figures overnight and, you know, how to, you know, none of that. You can do it in time with hard work. You can do anything in time with hard work, but, you know, to try and sell it to people that it can be done like with a little bit of this or a little bit of that or a bit of, you know, it never works like that.
You know, my business, I mean, as an entrepreneur, in today's world, the number of different skill sets you need is huge.
Yeah.
You know, you need to be able to sell, you need to be able to public speak, you need to do social media, connect with people, find other people, build a team, you know, fight off competition, handle the legals, handle the accountants.
Doing investment, deal with the tech, Merger and acquisitions.
It's not easy to make $1 million. It's not. If it is, then you're lucky. You're just right place, right time. Yeah. And, I had one of my businesses where that happened. It was right place, right time.
Like Clubhouse. Sorry. Clubhouse wasn't built for what it was used for. It was just right place, right time to be used as a contact tool, as a communication tool, because people are at home with no one to speak to. So Clubhouse is sometimes you build something and it gets used for a different purpose than what your intention was. That's what happens. But you buy websites sometimes as well. A mate of mine does business buying. So I don't know if you thought about actually just buying the full business, not just websites. But he does really well buying businesses because there's a lot of baby boomers at the moment who are retiring and they need to sell their business. They need to just make sure they got somebody good to take over it because they got a team of people in the office that they love and trust and work with all their life and whatever. So he does that. He buys businesses all around the world. That might be something. I don't know if you've looked into that business acquisition.
I have. It's not for me. Reason why I fell in love with the website and the online world is that I can be anyone. My staff can be anyone. It's 24/7. So there's no geographic restrictions. If I almost bought an educational center in Orlando. But that would mean that, if it was big enough, then I wouldn't have to be there. But, when you're buying a business like that, you're stuck in one location. And there's, the technology is changing everything.
He buys businesses everywhere. He just puts an MD in. So he's never stuck anywhere. He just puts an MD in to run it, usually part of his acquisition, that is he has a person, as part of the acquisition who's from that sector,
There's a guy called Dan Pena. I've been following Dan Pena. He's an amazing entrepreneur. Amazing, amazing entrepreneur. Literally took $720 and turned it into multi-billion.
I've been on some of his online webinars, Dan Pena, but my mate is Ken Mack. So Ken and Dan know each other. They know each other quite well, but Ken's been doing it for a while now. He's probably about 6-7 years. He used to be a property developer before that, and now he teaches people, same as Dan. He's done really well out of it. So I was just thinking, because you're the same as me. I'm more sort of sales and marketing focused. You're more tech, but we both cross over into each other's sides, if you like. Yeah, and a lot of the businesses that you can buy. You can buy them right now. You can buy businesses. I guess quite a few of them would have changed during the pandemic, but there were a lot of businesses available pre-pandemic, probably less now, that were run more traditionally and could have been improved massively just with a bit of IT input. Yeah, getting their systems up to date and all of that, because they're run by baby boomers, their IT has been developed over the years, a bit Frankenstein. He's not really that slick and not right as up to date. And just by going in and modernizing some businesses, you can make a lot of uplift and a lot of efficiencies.
You make a really good point there, Mike, because at the end of the day, it's about spotting opportunity. Yeah. Whether it's property, whether it's a big business, whether it's an online business, traditional business, or whatever it is if you have enough knowledge of a market, whatever that is, you can spot when something's wrong.
Yeah.
Whether that's, this property needs to be refurbished, we do that, it's going to be worth that much more.
Yeah.
In my case, it's online businesses. So when I look at an online, when I analyze an online business, I can spot if they've got something wrong. And I know that I have the knowledge to say, if we tweak that, we change that, we go and hire someone to fix it, this is going to be worth 50% more, double, 25% more, whatever it is. But that's when I spot an opportunity, and it's in online business, it's very, very fast.
Yeah.
And I think that's why I'm passionate about, I'm a coder, I understand that. Yeah. I've had
if they got an old domain, they've been found for all their keywords, but they got a very bad customer onboarding process. So they're losing 75% of their traffic or whatever. And if you could just improve that onboarding process and make it slicker, put the badges on there and all the stuff which just keeps the funnel flushing through rather than clogged up like it is right now, then all of a sudden you could buy that business, the traffic, the domain, the keywords, all of that is there. You just sort out the funnel, and the conversion goes from, you know, 1 in 10 to 1 in 3 or whatever. You've got yourself 3 times more, exactly, more customers, that type of process. Right. Like, yeah. And that's why you see, it's a bit like, you know, people see with the house, you know, well, there's a bit of land on the side, I can put an extension, or, you know, there's a big roof in there, I can stick a loft conversion, you know, or it's got a garage on the side, I can turn that into an office. It's the same sort of thing. This is why I was saying that there are a lot of these older businesses. I think more of them would have been forced to adapt to technology during the pandemic now, but there were, you know, a lot of these businesses beforehand, which just like, or actually, if I implement a good CRM and I implement a good account system and, you know, a good order processing system or whatever, all of a sudden this business has gone from, you know, pretty inefficient to much more slicker. All of a sudden it's starting to make a massive profit margin because everything's moving better, like, you know.
There's opportunity everywhere. Yeah, and you just said it. There's opportunity everywhere if you're willing to spend the time to study and understand the market, find something you like. You know, it's not, you know, who said it? It said it's simple, but it's not easy. It takes hard work, there's a lot of failure, it's a pain in the rear end. But you know, it's also very, very rewarding.
Yeah.
Not just financially. You know, when you win at something, it's great.
So if people have got like a website business they're looking for investors in, or a crypto business, which you're obviously keen to get into, or anything, you know, else they want to get in touch with you with, how do they do that? How do they follow you? Where do they engage with you?
You can go to my Twitter account or my Instagram account. Well, there's no pictures on there yet, but Twitter is coder@heart, CODER. At heart, and that's really what I am. I'm a coder at heart, and so you can find me on Instagram at coder.at.heart. So one of those two, you can get me, and happy to connect. If you've got a business idea, you want my input on it, you want me to look at it as an investment. I have a few friends also because we have a consortium. Happy to look at deals.
Yeah, sure. I guess you could probably do a bit of consultancy as well. Do you, if somebody's thinking about trying to invest in some web businesses and that, and guess you could probably do a bit of that as well, could you?
Can do, yeah, it depends. Yeah. I'm open. I'm very happy to help people, you know. Yeah. So it's, I don't have unlimited time, unfortunately. I wish I did. But, you know, if I had the time, I'm very happy to help.
Yeah, and check out Sunil on Clubhouse as well, which is where we met. He pops into the School of the Big Rooms, which is a club I run. At some point, I'm going to get all merchandise with Screw the Big Rooms on and lots of other things. So I'm working on that at the moment. So,
Nice. I need a T-shirt.
Yeah, I want to get I might get Screw the Big Rooms T-shirt. I might get Screw the Big Room Moderators T-shirt. And hoodies and all of that.
Hats off to you, Mike, because after going into Clubhouse and wandering around and, you know, you see these big gurus, all they're trying to do is make sales. And then came across your room and it was like, wow, you know, there's no subject here. We're just making connections with people. And there are some, not only there's some super successful people in your room, but they are willing to talk and share and connect. And I think that's more valuable sometimes than spending, you know, $10,000 on a guru. Having someone who's been there, done it, willing to share with you, that's invaluable. So thank you for creating the room. And, you know, you can probably find me in Mike's room if you want to pick my brains.
Yeah, definitely. Or just get connected to me. That's what I always say to people who are listening on a podcast or watching on YouTube. If you want to connect with any of my guests, just reach out to me. I'll hook you up. And that's the whole point of my podcast, for me to get to know people, see how I can help them, and also for my audience too as well. And, you know, all the people that tend to listen and watch are other networkers as well. I always say to people, rather than go like weeks and weeks networking with people to meet people, just listen to my podcast and my YouTube channel. I'm constantly bringing people, you know, for other people to meet and listen to, so that they don't have to put all the time in that I do, because I know I put a lot of time in, and most people aren't prepared to put that amount of time in. So this is what I'm always like, benefit, use me. I'm finding the people and getting them on my podcast. So all you got to do is reach out. So definitely, yeah. if you if if you listen to any of my other episodes, Sunil, and there's anyone that you want to reach out to, just let me know and I'll hook you up. But thanks very much for coming on the podcast and for coming in my room on Clubhouse, and look forward to seeing you more and more.
Thank you, and thank you, Mike. Real pleasure. Thank you very much.
No worries. Have a good day.
Yeah, cheers.